All right, well, we don't have a whole lot of time.
What time do you have to finish tonight, Michael?
We have to stop at 5 o'clock.
Oh, God, not too early.
No. But it's an hour and a half before we usually start, or an hour and 20 minutes. So, I wonder, we've turned off the lights. Maybe we could have at least some lights.
Shall we have a shorter lunch break?
Possibly. Let's see. Yes, that's good. That's just fine. Possibly. It's all right. We're not in a rush.
Okay.
Yet. Suffice it to say that there is a close connection between impurity and limitation of any kind. That I think is a very good statement. Physical, emotional, mental. So, what does purity really do? See, purity, this is one of the things, I think that if there is purity, then whatever is pure can be resonant with its archetype. And if it's not pure, if it's not purified, it will not be able to connect with its archetype. So, this relates to the old saying that, cleanliness is next to godliness. Obviously, whoever made that up was a Virgo. But there's a lot of truth in it. And you know, the realm of archetypes is the Virgo plane. In other words, here you find the archetypes. Just got to find this. Right there. And this is the monadic archetype, as far as man is concerned, is found right here on the monadic plane, ruled by Virgo. So, you ask yourself, what is my archetype? Well, you say, well, it's my soul. Well, that's true to a certain extent. But what is your still deeper archetype that you are meant to be and that is even expressing itself through your soul? See, one day, your soul will not be your archetype at all because you will have transcended the higher mental plane, but you still have an archetype. What will it be? It will be your monad. And I'm saying that the purity of the archetype is ruled by Virgo on the monadic plane. Purity of the archetype. Okay. Why are we talking about this anyway? We're talking about the need for purity in order to engage in the magical process. Absolute purity need not be considered by the aspirant. No one in the esoteric groups of the world has yet achieved the fifth initiation. Maybe someone has achieved the fourth, huh? Wherein the meaning will enter the consciousness in a blaze of intensest realization. Every initiation has a name. There's the birth, the baptism, the transfiguration, the crucifixion, and the
revelation.
Good. The revelation. Yeah, there it is. So there is a great revelation of purity at the master's degree. Okay, at the master's degree. For the majority, physical and emotional, mental and emotional purity are the objectives, and primarily, therefore, the liberation from emotional control and desire. So, what is he saying? That is he saying purity liberates, and that if you are pure, you are not tied to the things which confine you. Because fire burns ties, and water dissolves ties. In other words, when you subject a thing to water, it starts to dissolve, or at least become clean of the imperfections. When you subject the thing to fire, all bonds in that thing which are not archetypal are burned away. So fire burns away all non-archetypal relationships. You know, like you say in a person's life, you know, that relationship's just no good for you. Oh, but I'm so attached. Along comes the fire and burns the connection, so you're no longer attached to that relationship, and you say, oh, yeah, I now realize that relationship was no good for me. So the fire restores a thing to what it's intended to be, if it doesn't destroy it altogether. You know, you have to stop the fire at a certain point. If you let the fire burn out of control, then the form is completely destroyed. But there are such kinds of fires. Let me put it this way. There are destructive fires and purifying fires. And the three powers from Shambhala are purification, destruction, and organization. Which rays go with which? Well, okay, this is true what you say. But stick to the rays of aspect. What are the rays of aspect?
1, 2, 3.
So just stick to the rays of aspect when dealing with purification, destruction, and organization.
Destruction 1.
What?
Destruction 1.
So destruction is 1. Mm. Organization is?
3.
And purification, therefore?
Is 2.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
Purification is ray 2, so the form will not be destroyed by the purifying fire. It will just be returned to clean or to archetype. Now, if you really get into a destructive fire, then you just stand above the whole thing and say it's all gone and you're free. That's a different psychology. First race psychology loves to be free of form. And its karma, therefore, is to produce form. What does the Manus department do? Think about the Manus department. What is its big job? Well, you would think so with volcanoes, and that to a degree is true. The Manu builds the racial form. He's in charge of manipulating whatever the racial form so it can hold more and more spirit. Right now, the Manu is at work. I've been trying to intuit, you know, what that's all about. Manu is now readjusting the racial form of humanity. And basically, well, you know, it's that old story, would Rome have been better off if the barbarians had not overcome it? What am I driving at, see? I'm driving at that if you become totally degenerate, you need an infusion of a hardier, more primitive stock. So the man who doesn't let the racial form degenerate, he does not allow it to become weak. And so he manipulates the people, moves them around, so that doesn't happen.
But isn't that what has happened to every cell, any cell at all? That the cell can degenerate within itself?
It can,
and then it is infused with a new kind of energy or...
It might be, I don't know the physiology of that, but maybe so. I'm talking about now, let's say, a collection of cells. They need an infusion of something. Because, you know, and I think we in the West have got to be very careful to not degenerate.
Really?
spiritually, we are not in spiritually.
You see, then will come the others who will make sure that the degeneration physically, the manu's department, does not occur. That's from the angle of making sure that weakness, which is against the first ray, because if you have a weak physical form, you can't even be an incarnation. And it's the manu's job to hold the anchor. So we can look at this as a terrible compromise, but it's happened over and over again.
Are you talking about the physical body? Because are we getting weaker? What do you mean?
I believe that we have an epidemic of poor health, lack of vitality, emotional desires preying upon the physical vitality, prostitution of physical energies for all kinds of desire ends, just like we read. Yeah, I think there's a withering of the law going on right now.
Nah,
but it's having its effect. You bet it's having its effect.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we've got to do more line dancing and then we'll be in shape.
Is that relating to the purity of this room? That you have to work for yourself and for the community, humanity?
Absolutely. And if we get really indulgent, you know, Master Moria, he's very big on saying, you know, don't envy the rich. he says, I can think of more desirable pastimes than counting fleas on a feather bed. So in other words, if life is too soft, you just are caught in your own degeneration. And he says, the best way to make weaklings is to do things for them instead of having them do it for themselves. So what happens when you basically hire servants to do your work for you, or at least to do the work that you should be doing for yourself? You degenerate, you become weak.
So you won't get a PA?
Did you say?
Yeah.
You want a PA?
A PA.
Hey, I'm taking applications. I want to build up the strength of my PA. I've had many people volunteer, but they, well, not many, just one. Okay, here we go. Okay, hence the constant, even though badly worded injunction in many of the esoteric books, kill out desire. Actually, it was Master Hilarion in whose book, Kill Out This, Kill Out That, is everywhere to be found. Master Hilarion, you say, well, he's just a nice fifth-ray master. He shouldn't be talking about killing. But, I think he's a first-ray monad. He took the kingdom of heaven by violence, you know. And I think that, you know, when you look at the picture of Saint Paul, you've maybe seen the picture of Saint Paul.
Yeah.
He looks a little heavy.
Yeah.
There he is, this guy. That looks a little heavy, doesn't it? With that look, you could kill out a lot. By the way, notice he is a Scorpio after all. See the way that, you know, just like the Munsters, you know, how that comes down? That widow's peak is found with Scorpio and with Virgo, sometimes with Taurus too. But he's got a very pronounced one, you know, so, and he certainly has the Scorpionic look, and he doesn't look mild-mannered, does he? So it's not just a nice fifth-ray master.
It
was it?
Zealous, I would think. Very zealous,
yeah. I think he was a six-ray soul. A six-ray soul. You know, connected with Master Jesus, but a fifth-ray monad. That's my belief on that. Anyway, one day we will know all these things for sure. So anyway, for the majority, it's physical and emotional purity. And hence the constant injunction, kill out desire. Perhaps a more just rendering for the immediate present would be reorient desire and redirect desire. See, DK is being reasonable here. But DK is not a soft master either. He's always telling us to whip ourselves into shape and to, you know, spare no effort and to do things at all costs. See, he's very tough in his own way.
Strength.
Yeah. So I think for a constant process of reorientation of the entire desire nature, so that it eventually becomes a habitual state of mind, is the clue to all transmutation processes and to effective magical work. So basically he's saying a constant process of reorientation of the entire desire nature is the key to transmutation. Does that make sense? Once he tells us that aspiration is a scientific process, and that's what it means by the reorientation of the... I wonder if I could find the words aspiration and transmutation together. No. I'm not finding them together. But I remember, he says it's not just an emotional attitude. It definitely leads scientifically to elevation. So does this make sense? That if you're always redirecting your desire in an aspirational manner, transmutation will follow. What is transmutation? Do you know the definition?
Change.
It is definitely change. Yes, it has changed for the better, too. You know this, the passage across from one state of being to another or a higher through the agency of fire. That is transmutation. I'll find it for you. Passage across from one state of being to another through the agency of fire. That is the definition. It's from a treatise on cosmic fire. So this is transmutation. So what has the reorientation of desire to do with the passage across from one state of being to another through the agency of fire? What has reorienting desire to do with that? And maybe we could say, think about that for a minute. Passage across from one state of being, that's transmutation. So, does transmutation require fire? Yes, right? When you reorient your desire nature, is fire involved? Look at this word. Do you see any fire in there? It's the breath, yeah. Breath of fire.
Yes, breath of fire.
And what about this word?
Yes.
Aspiration. Aspiration. So when you reorient your desire nature, it enters the stage of aspiration. It becomes intense and fiery and upwardly inclined. So intense, and Master Moria says, strive fierily. And he always asks for fiery aspiration. I seek the way I yearn to know, visions I see and fleeting deep impressions, you know, and so forth. Let the fire rage, the flames devour, let all the dross be... Does that sound like transmutation? Let the fire rage, the flames devour, let all the dross be burnt, and let me enter through that gate and tread the way of fire. Okay, so now we have connected aspiration, transmutation, and fire. We have connected those. Do you find yourself to be an aspiring person? If Master Moria says to you, strive fierily, cultivate fiery aspiration. Does it mean anything to you? Does it mean anything to me when we hear those words? In other words, there has to be a certain amount of heat to take you onto the burning ground, right? So that heat is fire by friction. Let's call it this. We'll call it like a upwardly mobile fire by friction.
You need to desire it.
Directed.
To cause the desire it.
Desire, yes, yes.
To cause the friction.
And it's the desiring of high things. Mm. In other words, normal desire is like this, or like this, and aspiration is like this. Mm-hmm. So it rises, the heat rises. So it's a very good thing to cultivate aspiration. It sounds just like some mystical thing or other, but it's the fire in your furnace. You know, what keeps your... Just imagine driving a car without a spark, without ignition. It's not going anywhere.
But you have to burn forth for what you are doing.
Burning, burn forth, yes.
Burn for it.
Yes, look at these words. Burn, yearn. Reaching for a fiery reaching forth. Yes, you have to burn for it. And when you burn, your impurities burn away. And you are left as an archetypal human being. You're left the way you're supposed to be, instead of the way you've become. You know, in other words, for every life there is an archetype. Something like as good as it can be for that life. But most of us mess up somewhere along the way. And we never become all we could be in one life. There's so many attachments, and there's dirt, and there's obstruction, and accumulation, and all the rest that keeps us from being who we should be. I remember in this movie called The Little Buddha. The Little Buddha. It was the story of Siddhartha the Buddha, and it had kept on having flashbacks to his life. Maybe some of you saw that? Mm-hmm. Am I saying the word right? The Little Buddha? You never saw that?
Yes.
Long ago, yeah. Well, remember he had just been an ascetic, starving himself to death and mortifying his flesh and all the rest of it, and then the boat goes by with the musician, the music teacher, and his pupil in the boat, and he hears the music teacher speak. A great revelation came to him. The music teacher says, if you tighten the string too tight, it will snap. If you don't tighten it enough, it will not play. And right there he learned the noble middle path, right with that musical analogy. And I think that when it comes to striving, we have that same issue. You know, because there's that old saying in the Bible, which we talked about the other day, do not be righteous over much, why shouldst thou die? See, and you know, if you go off to the path of fire, so you burn up, and if you go to the left-hand path, then you can never resonate with the soul or spirit. So the noble middle path is the path of beauty. Noble middle path is the path of beauty. And it has a lot to do with the fourth ray. The Buddha was a Taurus after all, and he had the moon in Scorpio. One day we will know the astrology of all these illustrious things. I believe that Master DK actually gave us the astrology of the Buddha. He had the sun in Taurus and Pisces rising. Another world savior, you know what I mean? Master Kurumi, sun in Gemini, Pisces rising. Master DK, it's hard to say, but probably Gemini and Taurus, I would say. And the Christ, I would say, sun in Libra, Pisces rising. Something like that. Or maybe the reverse. Pisces and Libra. Every master has a chart too. And they sustain these charts because it's no longer personality appearing, right? It's who they are for a long time, and they hold their chart. Even we, in our soul, we have a chart. Meaning we have a permanent sign associated with our chart. It was born at a certain time, and it has kept that quality that was apparent at individualization, our soul. But what is that? It's a deep, deeply secret thing, and it probably accounts for a lot of how we are that our astrological chart does not show. Because we all know that the astrological chart cannot show everything. It just can't. You've had 10,000 lives or whatever, and every one of them has had a different chart, and you are a combination of all those charts. You're not just what you've got now. In other words, if you go into your causal body, you are much different than you appear to be right here. Although the closer we get to the third degree, the more we can bring through. Okay. Sorry. As progress on the path is made, the thought processes of the aspirant become more potent, and the thought forms created with definite purpose and in meditation work become more effective and bring about results. I want to make it easy for... just continue reading this, maybe. You have good English, just... I'll give Julie a chance in a minute.
It will be apparent, therefore, that in magical work, which has ever to be wrought out on the physical plane, there will always exist a tendency towards the left-hand bar. Until soul consciousness is permanently established and purity of motive has become a habit of the mind.
Okay, so the danger is given here. We build powerful thought forms. I've got to just get this back here. The black magician has very powerful thought forms and no purity of motive whatsoever, because he has chosen to limit himself to the third aspect, and with limitation comes impurity. The black magician is impure due to self-chosen limitation, admitting no second aspect, only the third aspect and the first. And if he does use the second aspect, he just uses it for personal purposes, only through his personality. So there will always be, you know, because we read yesterday, you can be an antichrist, you can be a deluder of souls, you know, there are black magicians who are on the second ray, they are deluders of souls. Probably there's a lot more of their disciples who are on the second ray, because basically they come from the earlier solar system, so their rays are primarily ray 3 and ray 1. Okay. Purity of motive becomes a habit of mind. Okay. And when do you achieve permanent soul consciousness? Between the second and the third initiation. And let's just say, at least, you will not go back. At least at that point. Okay.
Did you mean then with that you don't go back once you've reached that stage between second and third?
Yeah, that's right. And that is correct. Let's see if I can look at this. There's a word here, if I can find it. Today has not been a good day for me finding words. How do you spell the word, let's see. Hazard has one Z?
Yes.
At the time, the hierarchy is aiding in the development and at the same time protecting the way from him until such a time as glamour cannot reach him. This individual security of his is only reached between the time of taking the second initiation and the third, prior to that, he is still regarded as a potential hazard and as unstable.
After yesterday, that you can't be trusted until you...
Yeah, well, we were joking about it. At least you can not be trusted to turn back, and maybe after the fourth degree you can really be trusted. Because remember, even the rich young man at the third degree went sadly away, you know. Well, he turned around eventually. After that, he may suffer from illusion, but there is no fear of his permanently turning back and reaching the left-hand path.
Well, they talk about Hitler, don't they? About
yeah.
Being the third, wasn't he?
Well, I don't think so. I think Hitler may have precisely been a second degree initiate who turned back. In other words, we'll have to study that Klingsor myth. Eric was telling me about that. There's no worse opponent than someone who has tried to be pure and failed. So, you know, by the way, speaking of Hitler, he was obsessed with purity. He had, you know, almost puritanical attitudes. He was a strict vegetarian. And he had these, in other words, it was all the kind of earmarks of the second initiation. But when it came, and he had incredible control over the power of his emotional body. He was able to somehow throw that power down into the sacral and the emotional, higher powers lowered, so he could arouse people to a frenzy with his oratory. That's why I think, you know, on second thought, sixth-rate personality, first-rate soul. He had a lot of fourth-rate, too.
He was a bit of a medium as well, and brought through somebody from the Black Lodge, much more powerful than he.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right. By the way, I always like this little line. The major liability of the average initiate is sloth, or lack of speed. Does that give us pause? Initiate of the first degree, initiate of the second degree, whatever, right? But Hitler being so obsessed with purity, which is a big second initiation thing, wanted to purify the entire German race of all impure elements. And so he set about with his racial cleansing, getting rid of all impurity in everyone except himself. Obviously, he projected it all, right? He knew deep down he was a failure, a deep failure, and he projected that self-hatred onto everyone else. And then, if you fell short of his ideal of the master race, you were to be eliminated. Now, he began by eliminating the obvious types, and then if they had won, it would have been a gradual elimination of just about everybody, making them either slaves or killing them, except for a very few elite who fulfilled his vision of the master race. And this is all the person who did not pass the world, the flesh, and the devil. See, that's who you meet in the desert. So he wanted the world, and he certainly had the devil. I don't know about the flesh, whatever it was, but in a way, he wanted everybody's resources. As a matter of fact, when he looked at other countries, he just looked at them in this lower Taurian way of what they have and what we can get. So he just added up all their resources and said, these belong to Germany. So in a way, that's the flesh, that's the substance aspect. He didn't pass a single... He became his own Hydra. But, you know, Master Moria says for some of these people, there is a brown spot on Saturn reserved for them. Well, you know, I don't know, you know, he said, yeah, for the real malefactors, they end up on this spot in Saturn. Yeah, it, you know, it kind of, and the brown shirts and all the rest of it, right? So, if you really want to get thrown out of the system, you know, you act in a vile, you break the law of right human relations wherever you can, and you get ejected out of the system. So, and DK said that lives of selfishness had prepared these people for their task. Anyway, we are a potential hazard until midway between the second and third initiation. Yes.
Why do you think that he was put on that in that position in this life? And to do what he did, was that premeditated, or was there a kind of turning point where everything went wrong for him?
Well, he was a Libra rising.
Yes, and he was studying art in Vienna.
Yeah.
And he was expelled from the art school because he wasn't doing
not quite job. Quite good enough. He wasn't quite a good enough artist.
No. So he was expelled from the art school.
Yes. Yes.
And that made a very deep wound in him.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. But there were many things. I don't think we can just look at one life here. I think also when I read recently by Ian Kershaw a double biography of him. It's called Hubris and Nemesis. It won some kind of award. Marvelous. Basically, as a young man, he had a huge sense of entitlement, as if the world really owed him everything. He had a huge pride. And when he was wounded in this way, you know, he became raging, supremely angry. And then he began to look for other things, including drugs and experimenting in this way. And he became just the ideal, quite brilliant, incredibly intense vessel for these powers that could then use him. So it makes a fascinating study. You know, I was so interested to see that for the man of the 20th century, or the person of the 20th century, there were two primary candidates, Hitler and Einstein. I thought to myself, this is really interesting. Because, you know, one is the supreme hater of the Jews, and the other is like super Jew. And, of course, Einstein won, I think, which, you know, it betrays the bias of society, but I think Einstein should have won. Because, you know, it was incredible teaching humanity that matter and light are the same thing. That's an incredible revelation from the general third-ray, fifth-ray ashram. And Hitler, a destroyer of souls, you know, huge notoriety, fascinating, just the way evil is fascinating, but had, you know, couldn't really be considered the so-called man of the 20th century. Anyway, the reason we're fascinated by it is because we are in a dramatic situation that is very dangerous, where humanity could veer off and fail because it does not accept the hand of the solar angels. And we are fascinated by our own potential destruction. And so a person who embodies that potential destruction, you know, you say, how could anybody be so evil? And because it reflects to a small extent the evil within every one of us. And we want to know what that is, because it's so dangerous to us. Danger is as fascinating as delight. And now we have another opportunity, probably, to face that all over again, maybe under different circumstances. So, I'm just going to read a little more, and then we're going to have a strange day today, I think.
Michael, I'm thinking about this with Einstein and Hitler. When something has to be manifested on Earth, you have to have this duality.
Yeah.
Quite attention.
Yeah. He said, like Bismarck and Lincoln.
Yeah.
That was the duality. But there they were both on the same ray, and of course Hitler and Einstein were not. But still, Einstein represented everything Hitler hated, that's for sure. But Bismarck, Hitler, the Tibetans said that Bismarck anchored cosmic evil on our planet. Wow, what a statement. You know, in other words, and basically, I think what happened is that Bismarck was a representative of the planet Mars. He had a certain policy at the end of the 19th century. It was called blood and iron. If that's not Mars, I don't know what is. And Mars is a lower planet than our Earth and represents a backward drag on our Earth to such an extent, hello Asger, to such an extent that when the judgment day comes, perhaps the two-fifths of the human beings who will be removed from the planet will, I think, be sent first to the inner planes and then to Mars. Like I said the other day, for re-education. So I think that this blood and iron policy of Bismarck was precisely that. It represented the potential of falling back into Mars, which represented the Black Lodge at that time, and not towards Venus at all. And you know, our transition at this time is from Mars to Venus. That would represent progress for us, for humanity. It would represent the soul taking control of the Martian personality. In other words, all four lunar elementals are ruled by Mars, and the entire integrated personality is ruled by Mars. So if you anchor cosmic evil on Earth, you are somehow anchoring the potency of the previous regime on our planet. And Lincoln, of course, was just the opposite. You know, he had that first-rate quality, but he was definitely, in my view anyway, a second-rate monad, and he had a second-rate personality, essentially a second-rate type, but with the synthesis of the first-rate in his soul. So this was a very... And he had the sun in Aquarius, you know, looking forward towards the new possibility, where Bismarck was Aries and Leo. It was egotism embodied. So, like you say, you know, Einstein and Hitler are very interesting. They are poles apart. And humanity had to make a choice. I would have been rather upset if Hitler had been chosen as the man of the century. I think humanity would have been saying something, or Time magazine would have been saying something, choosing in that manner. Well, gosh, as we're just about ready to take our lunch break, you see, right at the perfect moment.
Bismarck, his aim was to connect, to gather Germany.
Yeah,
back.
Synthesize Germany.
Yes, was that his own personal issue of power? Influence?
Yeah. Well, the factor of synthesis, the shambolic factor, was very strong. You know, 1825, there was a shambolic impact. And, you know, there's such a thing as synthesis for good and synthesis not for good. And good can come out of evil. So there may have been a higher objective for Bismarck, surely.
Because that was...
But it was like synthesis over others. Yeah. That was a different thing.
Isn't he even called an avatar of the dweller?
Yeah, yeah. It says he's a racial avatar who grounded the Black Lodge in the 19th century. He anchored it. Yeah, an avatar, just like a Lincoln. But the thing is, there is a selfish synthesis ruled by negative Aries Leo, which were his two major signs. Matter of fact, he had all the first ray signs. He was Sun in Aries, Leo rising, Capricorn moon. And interestingly enough, Lincoln also had the Capricorn moon. You know, he was given to moodiness and depression, and, you know, he had a lot of responsibility. But Lincoln had Jupiterian signs. He was a sun a sun in Aquarius and Sagittarius rising. And his one of his nicknames was Honest Abe. Honest Abe. In other words, he represented a certain force for truth and for global synthesis. And it was so the synthesis was for a different motive. And I'm not saying that synthesizing Germany wasn't a good thing out of all of those petty little feudal states. Germany has had a terrible time with synthesis. Look what happened after World War II. It just splits down the middle. You know, its fourth-race soul is always potential for friction and division. And then finally it gets pulled back together on the harmony side, perhaps, and is paying its debts, for sure. Political psychology is really interesting. And
is this a correlation to the United Europe right now? You know,
yeah, and Master R. Exactly, and Master R. will not be too happy if all of this European Union splits apart, because it is his project to bring it all together. But of course, the third department is now where the stress is. Everybody's getting along reasonably well until the money problems happen. The money problems set up Hitler, and the money problems could set up stress for division in the European Union. So,
with Angela Merkel, of course, because she's the one who's blown the whole thing apart.
Well, she's tried to do, of course, is keep the union in her own way. She's tried to do that. And of course, and it's kind of German karma, I think. In other words, Germany, that was so responsible for splitting everything up and dominating everything, now has to, it's got the financial power, it's got to try to keep it together. Yeah. So it's very serious. It's very serious because we need a United States of Europe, so to speak. We need the Union. We need that. Otherwise, because, you know, Europe ruled by the fifth ray, in a way, if you think about it. The fifth root race and the fifth sub-race is largely the European designation. There is some five sub-four as well because of the Celtic influence. But it can fracture so easily according to the law of cleavage. You know, the European countries have been fighting each other forever. If you just go back a few hundred years, it's division all every place with constant wars. So this has been a huge benefit to try to pull that all together after the terrible experience of World War II.
Croatia and Serbia, I mean, you know, that was very recent, wasn't it?
Yes, very. They're not members of the Union, are they? I don't know the technicalities. No. Look, the whole thing is in the manners department. There's a terrible root race, sub-race conflict going on at the moment. It's a conflict between the third sub-race of the Aryan race, represented by the whole Arabic and Iranian world, the fourth and the fifth sub-races together, with the fourth being sort of the swing area, involving Spain and Greece and the lower European, the higher European areas, 5 sub 5, and with a few people, you know, of the nature who are working ahead spiritually that are getting into the sub-6 area, and there's got to be some kind of reconciliation now between the sub-6, sub-5, sub-4, and sub-3. And what we have right now is a wave of sub-3 representing the solar plexus and the sacral center trying to overwhelm that which has been established under sub-5 and sub-4 to a degree. And the Manu just can't allow that. I mean, of course, it's everybody's responsibility, but if you look at this in root race terms, that's what's happening. The forces that are focused below the diaphragm of humanity are now under the sixth ray final expression, trying to engulf the other forces. And I know it sounds racist and terribly, hard line, but this is, I would say, from the Manu's perspective, what's going on. And that's why the fortification of the sub-5 and the sub-4 is absolutely needed at this time. And after World War II, they got weak, because they've seen how terrible it was what had happened. So everybody opts for harmony. But you can't have harmony when you've got your enemy at the door. So I don't know how this will all work out, but from the Manu's perspective, there's only one good thing. And it is that the fact that the sixth ray will be out of incarnation by the year 2130, or just about that time. DK said in the year, he wrote it in the 1930, 1931, 1932, he said in 200 years the sixth ray is out of incarnation, carrying the sixth ray souls, by and large, there's always going to be a few, carrying them out of incarnation. So that is, if the cutting edge of the fifth root race can hang on long enough, then the major threat from the recrudescent sixth ray will not overcome it. And the next 15 years will decide that, as far as I can see. So I look at this in the most serious terms. I see the love, I see the light, I see everybody striving, I see wonderful things, I see great things, and I see a kind of effort to take man back below the diaphragm.
And that's fear, please. That's fear.
That's fear, and that's fear too. Absolutely, absolutely. And so therefore, the real enemy here is fundamentalism, which is always afraid.
Yes.
It's always afraid of the wider life. So wherever fundamentalism is occurring, it wants to drag us back below the diaphragm. And that's what he said in the beginning of Ray's initiations. He said that the personality elemental forces the fires to feed the lower centers. It's right in the beginning of the Ray's initiations. Personality elemental, solar plexus, sixth ray, forced feeding of the lower fires. You know, and even the spirituality is materialistic. So this union of the sacral center and the solar plexus center, now in total rebellion against all that civilization has brought, must be subdued. And in the subduing of this rebellion, I foresee great pain and great stress. But, you know, humanity's got to be free to move into the Aquarian Age so it doesn't become the age of universal death. It's universal something. It can't be universal death. He warned us against the reinitiation into the earth. And he warned us in the Taurus chapter about the reinitiation into the earth. So, I think we disciples have, you know, we're nice people and all the rest of it, but we have to take this seriously and try to strengthen the higher parts of humanity to hold the values which have been won at such tremendous cost over the last 400 or 500 years. Anyway, I'm off my soapbox now. It's time for lunch. and today is a shorter day. So we'll try to finish this, we'll try to get as far as we can with this rule number 9. And then at 5 o'clock we have to stop so we can do the theosophical thing. Those of you who are coming to hear me make a fool of myself, it'll be fun. Okay, we'll take a little break now. Lunch. Yes, come back when? Come back at 2:05. You know, 2:05. And today, although I know it will grieve you sorely, there will be no singing today.
Oh, I can't come back.
Oh, the grief, the pain. Okay.